Welcome to Nightchild Talks Prince, uncut and unscripted. So welcome back to Nightchild Reviews, uncut, home of environmental records, crickets chirping, water rushing, supposed to make you horny, just make me want to go to the bathroom. But anyway, welcome to Nightchild Reviews. Couple of things today. Later on, we're going to talk about some of the rarities of the Prince early days in our retro review. But I want to start off with something that I see online quite a lot about Prince. And I see it under a lot of comments on Facebook, on Twitter, various things. And it's something that's been said many times since Prince passed away. And that is, why didn't Prince have a will? Oh, if only he'd had a will. If he'd had a will, it would have been fine. It would have been a lot less mess, a lot less legal fees. Now, the first thing to say, this isn't legal advice in any shape, manner or form. Usually, for most people, having a will is a very sensible thing to do. It means that all the things you have, and it's something we don't like talking about, but they go to the people you want. Fully respect that. Totally something that I think is important. The thing I will say is we obviously looked at the Prince estate and the wranglings afterwards, and $45 million, you know, paid on legal fees. And we think, why didn't he have a will? And the question I always ask people is this: who could Prince leave it all to? I mean, it sounds a simple question, but who? Prince at the time wasn't married. Prince had no children at the time, sadly. His relationship with his family was off and on, complicated, difficult, as most relationships, you know, with family members can be sometimes. And obviously his family did ultimately inherit his estate. But he didn't always have a perfect relationship with those family members. So no wife, no children, no family members. Was there anybody that Prince really could have trusted to carry things on for him? Now, the first thing I'd say is that Prince very much lived in the now. He was always about the now and the next thing, the next song, the next album, the next tour. He was very much somebody who lived in the present. But towards the end of his career and his life, he clearly did spend some time reflecting. You only have to listen to the piano and microphone tour. You only have to listen to him talk about vanity, talk about his father. You only have to consider the fact that he was partway through writing his autobiography. I mean, that was sadly cut short, but he was clearly thinking about his life and his journey, the very fact that he's writing an autobiography, which is something I never thought Prince would do. And he was looking back, but ultimately, who did he have? At the time, knowing Prince, he was often kind of very much focus on the person who was with him at that time. I mean, in terms of who was his closest friends at the time, who was with him. I mean, at the time he passed away, Kirk Johnson was around. You know, would he have thought of Kirk Johnson? We don't know. Would he have thought of somebody else? Or some people say, well, yeah, well, couldn't he have left it to charity? And you know what? It's a fair point. Yes, he could have left it to charity. But what would happen to Paisley Park? It would still have to be run. And it'd probably end up being run by a business. And ultimately, his work would be effectively run by record companies because charities don't operate, you know, records, albums. It's not their business. It's not their thing. So even if they were left Prince's estate, they'd have to get a record company to, you know, operate it. And it's a difficult situation because the thing I always think about at the moment is, who does the music really belong to? I mean, it's Prince's music. You know, nobody who currently operates the estate really was involved in the writing of the music or the creation in, you know, of the musical arrangement or the lyrics or anything like that. It's not them that created the music. It was Prince. And it's a difficult situation. It's a difficult argument. I mean, this is the argument we often have about bootlegs, you know. Now, the argument against bootlegs when Prince was here was it's taking money from him, it's his work. But then he's often said also that, you know, he owns bootlegs, but he wouldn't ever think of, you know, that people sort of charging for them is wrong. And a lot of bootlegs are free and some people are charging for them, which is obviously very different because you're making money off somebody else's work. But at the moment, who does the work belong to? What is the morality of bootlegs when the artist has passed away? Now, usually people say, well, you're taking money from the family, you're taking money from the people he left it to. So there's that argument. But it's complicated. It's difficult. But going back to the will, you know, it's very easy to say, yeah, he should have had a will. He should have said what he wanted. But ultimately, no matter what he wanted, it would be up to the people here now to make that happen. If he said, you know, I specifically want to leave 5 million to this charity, of course it would have been respected. If he'd have said, what if Prince had said, I don't want anything released from the vault, even though he has said in interviews before that he thought all the contents of the vault would probably come out at some point, somehow. You know, so I don't think he necessarily would have done that. But once one's passed, it's still very much kind of up to the people here to make those wishes happen. It's difficult. It's truly difficult. And I think it's very easy to say, well, he should have just made his wishes known. But ultimately, he's left us the work. And somebody very close to me said something which really hit home. He said, we are the estate. And he meant that in the sense of the community is the estate. The people who love Prince's work is the estate. Prince's work is this catalogue of genius. And we are the estate. Every time we share it on Facebook, every time we talk about it on Twitter, every time we play Prince's music, every time we talk about Prince or share something he's done or watch a concert or support, you know, his work in any way, the community is the estate in a sense. It's not just the estate. Yes, the estate can release the official product. Yes, the estate can pull things from the vault. But ultimately, however much is in the vault, a huge amount of work is already out there. And it's up to us to celebrate Prince and to do that. We are very much the estate. And I think that's an important thing. We are the estate in so many ways. And Prince's work forms the core of that. And perhaps Prince wanted, I don't know, I wouldn't even presume to speak for him, but maybe, just possibly, he wanted different people to do different things, people to, you know, interpret his work and to appreciate his work. You see some dance groups you know, interpreting his work. You see his work reaching people through TikTok. You see his work reaching people through social media. And just maybe there are lots of, you know, creative people out there who can really introduce his work, which doesn't need, you know, anything doing to it. I'm not saying about changing the work, but just promoting it passionately. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much difference a will would have made. Had Prince said, well, you know, I'll leave it all to my family, divided up upon my, you know, amongst my family members, then yeah, you know, would have saved some lawyers' fees, definitely. But ultimately, we'd still have to run Paisley Park, still need a record company to, you know, do the things record companies do. It's difficult. And sometimes the estates where there's an obvious plan in place, like the David Barry estate, etc., is obviously much smoother. And when there's someone obvious to leave it to. But it is difficult. I mean, I don't know who Prince had that he fully trusted. I don't know. It's difficult to know. And you know, it's a very personal decision for him. And perhaps also, you know, whilst he was reflecting, I think he very much felt in some ways he had more time. But even then, I don't know if Prince ever would have said, you know, I'm leaving it all to this person. It's difficult. But then the thing is, Prince is bigger than all this. He's still in our lives. The fact we're still talking about him now, the fact that we're playing his music, you know, I'm playing, you know, a number of his albums, just been playing today, and I've been dancing around my apartment. probably look crazy to the neighbours, but, you know, it just brings joy. And, you know, that's a crucial thing. So it's easy to say, you know, yes, he should have had a will and he should have done this and should have done that. But it's difficult. It's difficult to know who to trust. And lots of people become involved after he passed, and it's very hard to know what people's motives are, to know what people want. But it's important that we realise that we're all part of the new power generation. We're all effectively, you know, this big community, and we all play a part you know, just even if it's just listening to music, listening to Prince's music, talking about it, wearing a t-shirt, whatever, we are part of that. So, you know, it's one of those tricky situations. In an ideal world, it would have been easy. There'd have been someone obvious. But you know what? He could have left it all to someone and that person said, right, I'm releasing nothing. Or they could have sold it instantly or anything. Because as we noticed with the obviously the family, lots of the family members have sold on their stake. So it probably would have ended up with a record company or, you know, business at some point. So it's difficult. It's very difficult. But I just wanted the real message to be, you are the estate. We are the estate. You know, all of us. So don't worry about, yes, we want great things for the estate. We want Super Deluxe. We want the estate to reach out to fans and to embrace what Prince is all about. But it's bigger than just the estate. It you know, it's everything. Prince is a worldwide phenomena and his impact is being felt more and more. You see artists, like I say, Janelle Monáe, you see Beyoncé, you see so many people, Lizzo, so many people kind of inspired by Prince, Alicia Keys, I mean, Misty Copeland, oh, the list is endless. Just his influence and his music is eternal. And it's like, I think the way I think of it is like Van Gogh or Monet or Picasso, any of the kind of artistic geniuses. Nobody knows, I mean, apart from if you're really, really into it, who ran the estate. Nobody knows who they left all their works to. I mean, unless you're really into it. What they know is that work still resonates today. That work still impacts people today. It is, in some ways, a kind of quasi-immortal thing. It goes beyond time. And people will be celebrating Prince's music in hundreds of years. I truly believe that. Thank you. Now, welcome to our little retro review section. Today, it's harking back to a video I did about the rarities of the early days of Prince, about those tracks that kind of were pre For You. And before his first album, he kind of had these tracks when he was working with other people. He was kind of working out his sound and he was collaborating. And it's quite an interesting time. It's just a very short video, 5 minutes, of about how he really was sort of beginning to establish his style and work out what it is he wanted to do. I hope you enjoy and thank you for listening.
Just as Prince was about to enter the cusp of his early career, he was already demonstrating a number of the aspects of his creative personality that would become hallmarks over the years. In the period centred around 1975-79, when Prince was just 17-21, he was already creating a number of tracks that found their outlet in various different ways. He was also learning and developing his studio techniques by being a guest artist for hire, and he was also appearing on other people's records and allowing his own songs to be used by other artists. Today, we look at some of those tracks that mark those early days of Prince's musical development. First off is the story of the Lewis Connection. This was a group from Minneapolis which featured Sonny Thompson, who would later become an NPG member, and brothers Pierre and Andre Lewis. Prince supplied background vocals and guitar to just one track entitled Got To Be Something Here. Although the album, The Lewis Connection, was released in 1979, albeit with a spelling error on the cover, Prince's contribution dates from sessions in 1976. The song has a pretty catchy hook and a great vocal delivery by Sonny. Prince admired Sonny's bass skills and this connection would become central to much of Prince's later work. Recorded in the same sessions was a track called Stone Lover. This was the only track released by MLF, a band from Minneapolis. MLF, short for Music, Love and Funk, also released the track in 1979. It is rumoured that Prince played on this track to raise money for a trip to New York in 1976. It is unclear whether this song or the previous one marks the first time Prince appeared on someone else's track, but again, it confirms the connection between Prince and Sonny, who is a member of this band. It is also a matter of controversy as to what part, if any, Prince played on the record, with different artists claiming different versions. It's also important to note that some of Prince's earliest recordings as part of the 94 East project with Pepe Willie and Andre Simone were actually recorded even earlier from 1975-79, but not released until much later. The 94 East project has a complicated and intriguing history and will be the subject of a video in the very near future. Another track recorded in 1976 was Make It Through the Storm, also known as We'll Make It Through the Storm. Prince re-recorded the track a number of times over a 5-year period and at one point considered it to be part of the 4U project, but later changed his mind. He then re-recorded the track with singer Sue Ann Carwell, and it was released as the B-side to her track Let Me, Let You, Rock Me. What also makes this track interesting is that Prince gave Chris Moon full credit for this track in exchange for Prince getting full credit on the track My Love Is Forever from the 4U album. This track was part of two prolific sessions in 1976 in which Prince produced a range of new songs. The first session generated the tracks Don't You Wanna Ride, Hey Lover, I Spend My Time Loving You, various instrumentals, and the track Rock Me Lover. And possibly the two most intriguing, Nightingale and Leaving for New York. Nightingale is a very minimalist acoustic guitar lament which shows, even at this early stage, Prince's remarkable ability to construct multi-layered vocals on a track. It also showcases Prince's trademark sustained falsetto refrains. Leaving for New York was possibly written as Prince left Minneapolis for New York in order to give his demo tape to record companies, but it works as a beautiful love song too. I know I said I'd never leave you, but this is something that I must do. I'm taking with me the memories of when we made love. Prince slides down a long trail of descending vocal motifs. The lyrics are also quite interesting. You recall my misery, caused by life's complexities. The track has a jazzy, upbeat refrain, and the piano skills for such a young artist are mature beyond their years. Prince seems relaxed, focused, and scats happily towards the end of the song. The second session in summer 1976 contained songs such as Aces, Baby, Diamond Eyes, Don't Forget, Don't Hold Back, Fantasy, I'm Yours, Jelly Jam, Love Is Forever, Make It Through the Storm, Since We've Been Together, Surprise, and Soft and Wet. Several of these tracks made it onto For You with Soft and Wet, I'm Yours, My Love Is Forever, which was originally called My Love Forever, and even the music from Jelly Jam made it onto Just As Long As We're Together. Finally is the unusually titled Fast Freddy, the Roller Disco King. This was a 12-inch track by Little Anthony and the Imperials, and it has a touch of the song Shaft about it and tells the story of the coolest guy around. These sessions were arranged by Pepe Willie in 1979 and later became part of the 94 East releases, which we shall explore later. On 94 East, the track is titled One Man Jam. The track is a classic 70s ode to the title of Freddy, who does his own thing and the ladies love him for it. Prince was responsible for the guitar, synths and keyboards, and had some cool little flourishes to proceedings. Prince was already at this stage of his career showing his appetite and energy as a working musician and learning his studio craft by focusing on specific elements of tracks for other people while simultaneously developing his own repertoire of songs. This was something that would continue to reach new heights as Prince's career continued onwards.